Today on Growing Through Grace.
Notice that the hatred religiously for Paul is still steaming 2 years later in Jerusalem, 60 miles away. So when the new guy comes in, they don't say, "Welcome, we're glad to have you." They say, "We need you to bring this guy back here for trial." And their plot was already to take him out.
Listening to Growing Through Grace with Pastor Jack Abelin of Morningstar Christian Chapel in Whittier, California. In our continued look at the book of Acts, we now come to chapter 25, where Paul, having been arrested and imprisoned, now stands before the next Roman governor, Festus. It had been 2 years since his last appeal, and now Pastor Jack will examine for us the encounter between these two men. There's some great lessons waiting for us in this message. So let's listen in as our teacher brings us today's study. Here's Pastor Jack.
All right, let's open our Bibles tonight to the book of Acts, chapter 25. Last week in chapter 24, Paul appeared before this fellow, Felix. Wicked guy, hateful guy. He is known in history for his cruelty, that he ruled by force. He was very aware of Jewish practices. He'd been around a long time. He was very aware of the way, the life of the believer as well. The Sanhedrin came all the way to Caesarea just to accuse Paul. Paul shared with Felix and the elders, as their high-priced attorney stood by, what God had done in his life. Felix delayed his decision about Paul, sent the Sanhedrin home 60 miles away. Over the next couple of weeks and months, went and met with Paul and asked him with his wife about a personal faith in Christ. He trembled when he heard the gospel, but he didn't act upon it. And then he decided not to let Paul go or to rule in his favor. He would see him again at some point, put him off. It bothered him. But we are finally told towards the end of chapter 24 that he was holding on to Paul so that he might get some money from his friends, maybe a bribe. He knew he was innocent, but if he could profit from it, he'd let him go that way. We mentioned last week as we went through chapter 24 that Felix might be a fellow that holds the honor for the greatest waster of opportunity. I mean, the greatest preacher probably the world has ever seen is in his prison, and he's accessible, and yet nothing really takes place. So Antonius Felix, as his name was, he was governor there in Judea till 62 AD or so, 12 years. He came through the line of Pilate's. He got his job because his brother was a friend to Claudius Caesar. He was the only slave to ever become a governor, at least in record. It didn't soften him up. It just made him beat everyone a little harder, thinking the world owed him a life. He was finally recalled for breaking up the Sicarii's revolution that was taking place in that place at the time. As he was hauled off to Rome, where he just disappeared, his wife went to Vesuvius for shopping at the time of the eruption and was killed there. So Paul spends two years in prison. In fact, we skip 2 years from verse 27, to chapter 25. 2 years go by. A change in leadership. We're back to square one. Paul still hasn't been found guilty of anything. But here comes a guy who knows nothing about him, his culture, or his faith in Christ. So it seems like he's gone backwards. So we read in, let's start in verse 27 of the previous chapter, and it says this. But after 2 years, Porcius Festus succeeds Felix, and Felix, wanting to do the Jews a favor, left Paul bound. And when Festus has come to the province, after 3 days, he went from Caesarea to Jerusalem, and the high priest and the chief men of the Jews informed him against Paul, and they petitioned him, asking a favor against him, that he would summon him to Jerusalem, while they would then lie in ambush along the road to kill him. Porcius Festus, his name means swine festival. I don't know who his parents were, but this wasn't funny. Pig party, basically. We don't know anything about him. We know he was 70 years old when he came to power. We know that he died 2 years later. But he was more committed, it seems, just from historical standpoints, to fairness and to justice than Felix was. Ultimately, however, and here's the story in chapter 25, ultimately, he would fall to the fear of man. He would do the wrong thing or do nothing at all. He did so for his own benefit. And so we start the new year with Paul having been in jail for 2 years, and he's about to be in jail for several more. By the time we get to chapter 26, which is Paul's sermon to Agrippa, we will just about have finished Paul's time in prison, and the rest of the chapters will, a chapter and a half will, or two, will take us to Rome, where we'll lose the story or end the story of the book of Acts. Notice in verse 1 that Festus, this new guy, wasted no time going to work. 7-year-old guy. 3 days he was in power when he already went to Jerusalem for diplomatic introductions to see the place for himself. He had been informed, like everyone, for his predecessors, that there was lots of problems in Jerusalem. He was determined to avoid it. He'd been warned of the violence and the rioting and the political pressure and the fanaticism. I'm sure he felt he could handle it. After all, he's 70 years old. He'd seen it all. So get a picture of this old guy taking over Paul, still locked up, trying to get off on the right foot. History tells us that the high priest Annas was dead. His substitute, Jonathan, had been killed by Felix because Felix didn't like him. And now there was a fellow named Ishmael who was the man in charge. Bible doesn't tell us that. We have historical books that do. No matter the person, notice that the hatred religiously for Paul is still steaming 2 years later in Jerusalem, 60 miles away. So when the new guy comes in, they don't say, welcome, we're glad to have you. They say, hey, we need a fair one. We need you to bring this guy back here for trial. And their plot was already to take him out. The council hoped the new ruler would, I guess, be easier to use for their own purposes. But look how deep bitterness runs here. It had been on their agenda now for years to kill Paul in any way they could. First, it was 40 guys taking a vow, we won't eat till he's dead. Now the entire Supreme Court of Israel, the Sanhedrin itself, would handle the killing. Hello, Festus. Nice to meet you. Glad to have you. Could you do us a little favor? We'd be much obliged. And here's a 7-year-old guy wanting to get a grip on the problem, being confronted by the most powerful men, certainly, in the country. So you have a prisoner in Caesarea. We'd like you to bring him here to the Sanhedrin. And they thought if he agreed, they could just ambush him along the way. But look how wicked things had gotten. Go back in chronological time, 30 years, to the time of Jesus, who was hustled and betrayed and killed, if you will, by the Sanhedrin and their plotters. For the last 25 years, the Holy Spirit has reached out to the nation, many Jews getting saved, tons of Gentiles as well. In 10 years or so from where we are reading, Titus and the Roman army, the 10th Legion of the Roman army, will surround Jerusalem, besiege it, burn it to the ground, and see 1 million people die in one day. They will absolutely obliterate the capital of Israel and wipe out the nation. And the Jews will have no place to call home. That's 10 years down the road. For the next 1,878 years from then, Israel will not have a homeland. They will have been dispersed through the entire world. No temple, no sacrifice, no high priest, no Sanhedrin. And here you find at least the cause in some aspects, the plotting, the lying lips, the hateful ways, the political charades, the religious leaders in plain view, but understand, historically, they're running out of time. You know, God has given great opportunity to the nation. So they hit him up in the few days he comes to Jerusalem for diplomatic reasons. And verse 4 Festus answers and says that Paul should be kept at Caesarea and that he would himself going there would be going there shortly. Therefore, he said, let those of you who have authority among you go down with me and you can accuse this man and we'll see if there's any fault to be found in him. And when he had stayed amongst them or remained amongst them more than 10 days, he went down to Jerusalem and the next day sitting on the judgment seat, he commanded Paul to be brought. Festus's answer, I think, should tell you, and you'll find that to be so in the Bible, that the Roman justice system, for the most part, was fair and had processes that they followed. Corrupt nation, for sure. But their laws and their practices were typically, at least until the corruption came from the leadership, what was pretty sound. We don't know if he knew about Paul. We do know that before he would deal with the case, he realized that if it's in a Roman court, he wasn't about to kick it down to a lower court for review. So when these guys said, we'd like to see him, he said, no, I'm in charge. Maybe he didn't get that. I'm Festus. I'm the pig party. Don't mess with me. So Festus, understand, was wary of them. He wanted peace, but he couldn't be manipulated by them, certainly. And after all, Rome ruled the world, not the Judea, not Sanhedrin. So if you have a case, you can go with me down to Caesarea. You can bring your witnesses, but I'm not bringing my prisoner to you. You can come and see me if that's what you want. Notice he said in verse 6 that he stayed there for over 10 days. I'm sure that he was schmoozing. You know that he was living as a guest of the Sanhedrin or of the leaders, dinners, temple tour, theater tickets. Maybe these guys will chill out. But the very day that he went home, these guys were there. That's how much hatred was driving them. Paul wasn't aware of any of this. He was locked up. But here comes this unwarranted kind of anger towards Paul and the hatred that was burning 2 years later. So they sit down when they get back in the judgment seat, which was right outside the amphitheater on the coast there. It is still there today. If you go to Israel with us, it's the first stop on our tour, but it is a place where Paul stayed for several years. Verse 8, and when he had come, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood about and laid many serious complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar have I offended in anything at all. The accusations were pretty much like 2 years before, driven by hatred, non-existent evidence, no credible witnesses. They figured they could make it up by just screaming a little louder at a new governor they hoped would cave in. Paul had no one to defend him. His defense was pretty much like it had been 2 years ago with Felix. He just said, yeah, I didn't do it. Yeah, that didn't happen. Yeah, that's not true. And then he just folded his hands. What else can I do? You've got no proof. You know, he said, she said. I mean, you can accuse him of anything you want, but there's got to be proof. This ongoing mess has now entered its third year for Paul. I want to point that out to you. You're a believer and you're serving the Lord and you've done the right thing. And for the third year, you are now locked up without any charges. What kind of attitude would you have about now? How would you like it if this is what had been happening to you? And Paul is driven to his knees. I'm sure that he prayed, Lord, how long is this going to go on? Fix this. Felix had known that Paul was innocent, and he had done nothing. He had hoped to get some bribe money out of Paul's friends. But Paul couldn't go that route. He knew that it was available, but he didn't think that was the way that the Lord would work. So he stays in prison. Now he stands before a guy, Festus, who knows nothing about Jewish law. He knows nothing about the Jewish religion. He knows nothing about Christianity to speak of. He doesn't know about Jewish politics. He doesn't know anything at all, and yet he's in charge in this Jewish area. He knew nothing about Paul, Paul's faith, Paul's case. Here come the people, same charges, same baloney. And you want to say to yourself, well, Festus, 70 years old, he'll probably do the right thing. Well, verse 9 tells us otherwise. As this, you know, Paul pleading not guilty and they accusing him continued, Paul wanting to do the Jews a favor, isn't that exactly what we just read of Felix back in verse 27. He wanted to do the Jews a favor. Here's the second guy wanting to do the Jews a favor. Not do the right thing, just do a favor. Answered Paul and said, would you be willing to go to Jerusalem that you could be judged before me concerning these things? I'll go there and hold court, but can we do it in Jerusalem? In light of the evidence, in light of his better judgment, Felix chooses a politically expedient agenda for himself. Notice the words, verse 9, but Festus. No witnesses, no truth, no testimony, no proof, but Festus. It was true that much of what he was hearing was over his head. If you go to verse 20 for a minute, and we'll get there in a moment, but he'll say this, and because I was uncertain about such questions, I asked whether he was willing to go to Jerusalem and there be judged concerning these matters. This was beyond him. Verse 25, just jump a little further. But when I found that he had done or committed nothing deserving of death, and yet he appealed himself to Augustus, I decided to send him. So I don't have any charges. I don't know what to accuse him of. As far as I know, he's innocent. But he's pushed my hand. That's not true, but that's what he's arguing. Right? So Festus does the wrong thing, but Festus, he wants to be politically expedient. The Sanhedrin had different ideas about Paul. If you go back, we're bouncing around a little bit, verse 24, Festus writes to Agrippa, and he says, these men that are here with me, you see this man about whom the whole congregation or assembly of the Jews has petitioned me, both at Jerusalem and here, crying out that he was not fit to live any longer. So these are the people he wants to please. They're standing in front of him going, we want to kill him. He doesn't deserve to breathe another day. Hey, Paul, would you mind going there? Yes, I'd mind going there. He knew what they were up against, or he was up against. He knew this was a certain execution. He offered to go himself, but that wouldn't have been enough comfort, I think. But just suffice it to say that both Pilate and Felix and now Festus, countless others, were driven in their power by self-interest and a fear of man. And Paul is stuck in the middle. He's just serving the Lord faithfully and all around, and people are dropping the ball. And this after years of being on the road, the most faithful guy you'd ever want to find, who couldn't have suffered more if he'd... I don't think he could look for more trouble than he had. This is the reward of a life well lived, if you will. So, Paul, would you be willing to go? And Paul said in verse 10, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat. He was a Roman, remember. Where I ought to be judged. To the Jews, I have done no wrong, as you very well know. For if I am an offender or have committed something deserving of death, I do not object to dying. But if there is nothing in all of these things of which these men accuse me, no one can deliver me to them. So I'm going to appeal my case to Caesar. Paul was not short on words. He wasn't afraid to speak when necessary. I think that after 2 years of being locked up, he'd probably had enough. Here was just another cheap trick by a Roman governor that even violated Roman justice. And he's disgusted with being used as a political pawn. And so Paul plays his ace in the hole. And as a Roman, that is, every Roman citizen has the right to have his case heard by the Supreme Court. And in this case, by the supreme leader, if you will, of the Romans, Caesar himself. I know I'm innocent. You know what would await me there, verse 24, we just read it. If you want to render a fair judgment, fine. If not, then I want to exercise my Roman citizenship right. I want to appeal my case to Caesar. Maybe he'll have the backbone for a fair justice trial. But if not, I'm certainly not going with these wicked men back to Jerusalem. Not afraid to die if I've done something wrong, but I haven't done anything wrong. So I'd rather have Caesar decide that and have him adjudicate the charges than you or them. Pretty amazing place that Paul finds himself in. We read in verse 12 very tersely, then Festus, when he had called and conferred with the council, his council there in Caesarea. He responded to Paul's request by saying, "You've appealed to Caesar, then to Caesar you shall go." I have to believe that everything we read, that Festus was shocked and taken aback at Paul's request, that he underestimated this little man with these polite manners. This was a bombshell. Remember, Festus is looking to curry favor with the Jews, who are a captive people, and it has just exploded in his face. By the way, the person that is ruling in Rome, the Caesar, is named Nero at this time. For the first 5 years of his rule, Nero was a fairly stable guy, made fairly logical decisions as far as the world is concerned, if you will. He'd been fair and just. He was influenced by one of his great closest friends, a Stoic philosopher named Seneca, who was a kind of a balanced guy. Sometime after 5 years, Nero goes out of his mind. It's like he falls off the edge of a cliff. He begins to blame Christians he burns down the poor section of Rome because he wanted to rebuild it, and then pointed his finger at the Christians. And there are at least some Bible commentators that believe that what pushed him over the end was this meeting that he had with Paul, who, you know, didn't mince words. "Hi, Nero, let me tell you what's up." You can just imagine what happened that night or that day. But we can't prove that. It's just the time is fairly close, but it is a guess at best on everybody's part. So I think that Festus was just freaked out about this. Festus knew that this meant problems. Think about it. He's been on the job for 2 weeks. 2 weeks. And his first case is appealing to Caesar. He's been sent there to keep peace, take over, use his 70 years of experience, you know, to make an impact. That Felix always was stirring stuff up, and he hasn't been there more than 2 weeks, and his first case is going over his head. How's that going to make me look? And what charges am I going to send with him? They said he did this stuff. I don't even know what they're talking about. He doesn't want to stand in front of them. He'd rather risk it in Rome, and that could be death. I mean, that's a big gamble if you're wrong. So he confers with his council, he finds out what the law might be, and they tell him, look, if he has to go, he's got to go. And I think you can almost hear like maybe bitter kind of anger in his voice. You want to talk to Caesar? Okay, you go talk to Caesar. Fine, that's where you're going. And he just dismisses him, and he sends the guys packing. But now he's got this dilemma. What do I do with Paul? And where does he go? Verse 13 tells us that after some days, King Agrippa and Bernice came to Caesarea to greet the new governor. And when they had been there for many days, Festus laid Paul's case before the king. And he said, "Now there is a certain man left here, a prisoner of Felix." So Festus is brooding. Everybody's coming to welcome the new guy on the block. When King Agrippa II, we'll call him KA2, shows up with Bernice to officially welcome Festus. Bernice was the daughter of King Agrippa I. When she was 16 years old, he died and she married her uncle, who then subsequently died as well. When he died, she moved in with this guy who happened to be her brother, in an incestual relationship and having an affair. All of Rome, as crooked as they were, frowned on this relationship.
Well, that unfortunately is all that we have time for today, but we'll pick up the balance of Acts chapter 25 the next time we're together. This has been the first part of a two-part study taught by Pastor Jack Abelin. If you'd like to get the entire message, we do have that available for you. All you need to do to order, simply contact us and ask for study number 3085. Now, it's always helpful for us to know the radio station that you're listening to, so be sure to mention those call letters when you get a hold of us. And as we're studying through the book of Acts, we'd like to let you know that we have all of Pastor Jack's teachings through the book of Acts on a single MP3 USB flash drive. Well, this way you can go back and listen to any previous studies, or you can stop and start, or you can share these amazing studies of the Acts of the First Century Church with a friend or family member. So if you'd like to order Pastor Jack's studies through the book of Acts, all in the MP3 format on a single USB flash drive, or to get today's study, just dial our toll-free phone number at 866-88-GRACE. That's 866-884-7223. Again, that's 866-884-7223. You can also order by mail. Just address your letter to Growing Through Grace, P.O. Box 1954, Whittier, California, 90609. Or this and all of our resources are available online at growingthroughgrace.com. Again, that's growingthroughgrace.com. And that does finish up our time for today. We invite you to plan on joining us next time as we'll continue working our way through the book of Acts. Until then, as you daily walk with our Lord Jesus Christ, may you continue to grow in His grace. Growing Through Grace is a listener-supported ministry brought to you by Morningstar Christian Chapel in Whittier, California, a Calvary Chapel outreach.